Hey ladies, it's Bridget Todd here. As women, we put our hearts into everything. May is High Blood Pressure Education Month, and it's time to focus on our heart health. Release the Pressure wants to help Black women look at self-care as an act of self-preservation. During High Blood Pressure Education Month, let's help get to our goal of 100,000 Black women putting their hearts first and learn more about their heart health. Visit iHeartRadio.com/RTP for a chance to receive a $1,000 gift card to take care of yourself and prioritize your heart health. That's iHeartRadio.com/RTP.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big MQL man. Then he just kept saying things like, "The more MQLs, the better," over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means marketing qualified lead. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the MQL man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/customer to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/customer. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Hi, it's Bridget Todd, host of There Are No Girls on the Internet. Listen, technology has made our lives easier in some ways, but it's also made us homebodies, scrolling mindlessly. Well, you get the point. Let Rails to Trails Conservancy unstick you from home. When you get out on a trail and get to walking, you'll feel so good. Trust me. You'll see that being out on the trail is so much more than a day outside. It's good for your soul. Get ideas for getting outside on the trail from Rails to Trails Conservancy, the nation's largest trails, walking, and biking advocacy organization. Visit railstotrails.org/iHeart and on social media at Rails to Trails. One of my favorite conversations I've ever had on There Are No Girls on the Internet is with a writer who was targeted and harassed online about how she continues to stay safe while doing visible work on the internet. Without missing a beat, she said, "Anybody worried about online harassment should sign up for Delete Me." I signed up for Delete Me right then and there, and I personally recommend it to anyone. Sign up and provide Delete Me with exactly what information you want deleted, and their experts take it from there. Take control of your data and keep your private life private by signing up for Delete Me. Now at a special discount for our listeners. Today, get 20% off your Delete Me plan when you go to joindeleteme.com/nogirls and use promo code NOGIRLS at checkout. The only way to get 20% off is to go to joindeleteme.com/nogirls and enter code NOGIRLS at checkout. That's joindeleteme.com/nogirls, code NOGIRLS.
Best of luck, especially if you're Black and brown. I'm rooting for you. I hope you get listened to. I hope you get a raise. I hope you get your pay. Like, I hope you get listened to. But otherwise, like, I'm so sorry. It's not our ministry. We can just be outside observers and commentators.
There Are No Girls on the Internet is a production of iHeartRadio and Unboss Creative. I'm Bridget Todd, and this is There Are No Girls on the Internet. Here in the United States, there are 50 days left until our midterm elections. Election season can be a bit of a mess. I used to work on campaigns, and I can tell you that it wasn't always hope and change. Sometimes it was more like eating pizza for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, or crying in a storage closet. And even beyond the way that staffers are treated on political campaigns, sometimes it seems like the tactics out there to engage voters are just kind of stale or just plain old not effective. And with so much at stake, you know, literally the fabric of our democracy, shouldn't things be better? And shouldn't everyone feel represented, engaged, and checked in? So, how can we make sure that all voters are showing up and that nobody is being shut out of our democracy? Using digital tools to answer that very question is Tatenda's mission in life.
I am Tatenda Musapatiki, and I am the CEO and founder of the Voter Formation Project.
So can you tell us a little bit about the Voter Formation Project?
So I founded the organization in December of 2020, and we went public in 21. And it's an organization that I founded to be a national organization that works in many states to use the best of digital marketing tactics in order to reach Black and Brown and other disadvantaged communities. So we use, you know, digital ads. We look at different ways that corporate marketers are doing their campaigns. That way we can apply it to political work. And then also we want to be doing education with people who are running smaller organizations and may not have as much knowledge about digital to be able to provide them with resources.
When we first met, you were working at Facebook, and I talk a lot about Facebook on this show. People are always like, oh, you really hate Facebook. And I used to say like, oh, I have a lot of good friends that work at Facebook, and that no longer includes you. So can you talk to us a little bit about how you went from your work at Facebook to doing the work that you're doing now, really working to engage Black and Brown voters?
Sure. You know, it's more of a direct path than I think people would think. I loved my job at Facebook, and I was there. I was the client solutions manager for Democratic politics, which means that I helped people on the left. So think parties, committees, candidates, and organizations, and then the agencies that support them with their Facebook strategies, their buys, thinking through how best they could reach their goals on the platform, and really like being the voice of the company to these clients and vice versa. As you can imagine, between 2015 and 2019, it got a little rough. There was a lot of things that happened in that period of time, which made my job significantly less enjoyable. But I felt very strongly about the work I did and the causes I got to support, and also how I was treated as an employee. It was like the best employer I'd had.
Wow.
Which I have no qualms saying. And so it got to the point where the company was like rethinking how it was that they wanted to do political ads. And I liked my old job and I didn't want a different job. And I couldn't find another role that would really fulfill what I needed in my next steps. And so I left to go to Acronym to build my own program. One of the biggest frustrations of my job, and truly one of the biggest ones, and given all the things that happened there, it's saying a lot that this was a frustration, is that I kept seeing the same kinds of campaigns engaging the same people over and over again. There was very, very little experimentation in terms of tactics or in terms of creative, meaning the ads that were put on, or in terms of strategies that people were using for voter registration and mobilization. And of the strategies that were being deployed, none of them used corporate best marketing practices, which also just seemed insane to me, given all the things I had learned. And it's rare that political marketers or people who come up in digital political work get exposed to how corporate marketing works and get exposed to like some of the best minds in corporate marketing and how they think about building their campaigns. And so getting to see that just like blew my brain open. And I just became a sponge of like, I want to learn so much more about how all these different industries do their campaigns and why they do their campaigns and the science behind them, which only led me to think that the way that we do things is so messed up. I was like, this doesn't make any sense given how the rest, like truly the rest of the marketing industries work. So I wanted to go build my own campaign. So I, Tara allowed me to come on to Acronym and said, yep, build what you want, test what you want. And that is what I did.
When it comes to testing out new tactics in elections, campaigns are not really testing to figure out effective ways to engage Black and Brown voters the same way they are with our white counterparts. Now, the reasons for this are kind of complicated, but one of them is just the good old-fashioned systemic racism of Black and Brown people being shut out of systems for so long.
Oh, we're about to break it all the way down. It is a mishmash of corporate greed and racism, like fundamentally. So let's start with the racism is probably easier to discuss. So like when folks are doing their campaigns and they're thinking about like, okay, these are the people I need to engage, it is harder to reach people of color online. It just is. It's harder because the data systems that are used both by platforms and by campaigns to identify voters are based on things called data points. And data points are things like your credit history, your addresses, your phone number, your racial identity, your ethnicity. And people of color have fewer data points because of systemic racism in society due to no access to credit, not allowed to own homes, kept from home ownership, kept from, you know, car ownership. So all of those things, like if you're a renter, you have a lot fewer data points. If you've never bought anything with credit or don't have a credit card, fewer data points. If you are unbanked, fewer data points. So data points are the things that algorithms have built, or like targeting systems have built into many social media platforms, how they reach people. It's not exclusive, which is why the internet is great for reaching people of color, because it's not the only way you can do it, but it is a pretty heavy way of doing it, and the systems that campaigns use to identify people. So because it's more expensive, and because many of the ways that foundations or donors evaluate programs is by cost, these campaigns to reach people of color are often viewed as more expensive and not as effective, because the mechanisms used to measure them are racist based on systemic data. And the way that programs are evaluated is based on this entire thing that makes it harder to reach voters of color. So like, that's one piece. Like, and I would say the biggest piece, it's something that I'm, the longer I'm a founder, the more I just like want to beat my head against a wall. I feel like I'm having the same conversations over and over again, and they're just so frustrating.
This frustration around systemic racism that limits how Black and Brown people are engaged by campaigns is one thing. But add in the extractive nature of the digital consultant class in the political landscape, and all of this inequality gets even more entrenched. Because think about it. If you're a consultant being paid by a campaign, you aren't necessarily thinking about how to reinvent the wheel. And you probably are not going to take the risks necessary to learn how to do this work effectively, or really test anything out. In short, you might just play it safe because you want to be paid.
So in, I would say, the overall digital landscape of progressive politics and even like nonprofits, so civic engagement work that is outside of like partisan politics, there are a few major agencies that are hired by most folks at a certain level to do digital buying. Those people make their money based on promises that they give to clients about effectiveness of campaigns. And when you start to experiment or go outside of that, you are introducing a risk, which means that you are less likely to deliver for your client. And then when you're talking about experimentation, the experimentation tends to be less bold, because how is it that you explain to your client, like, oh, we're doing this thing and it might not work. You know, clients are like, not like, organizations that have to report to a donor are not like keen to tell their like donor, like, hey, I'm going to do this thing and it might not work.
And y'all are going to pay for it.
Yeah. Like, it's hard to do. I like came into this space, like putting a stake in the ground that that's what I'm going to do. So it's been easier to me, because I am like, I am the digital measurement lady, and I am the person who's going to say the things that no one's going to say to you. I feel like I've built a bit of that reputation. So I don't have the same fear as like other entrenched organizations who have made like promises on efficacy or whatnot to folks. And, you know, it's a chicken and the egg. Like, there is a problem with these organizations not taking the risks, and not taking the risks in an environment that is constantly changing. And folks who refuse to be more lenient about how it is that you evaluate program. If a program is more expensive by a couple hundred dollars per voter, it's not great, but it also should not be the end of the world. And it shouldn't be the overall metric by which you measure a campaign, or that you decide to disperse to a campaign. And then to get back to the racism, all of those organizations that do the digital media buying or the measurement tend to be run by white men or white women, whatever, white people who like aren't promoting people of color within their organizations. Or if they are, like, bless up, I hope you're okay. I certainly wasn't when I was in them. And so it just, it's just this ever evolving cycle where there needs to be an organization pushing from the outside saying, this is crazy. This is not healthy. And it's actually not good for democracy, because if we are saying that we know that voters of color and people are of color are kind of like the barometer for if we have a fair society, are they able to vote at equal rates as their white counterparts? And the answer is no. But then we're holding those organizations to an impossible standard to like reach the same quotas and cost effectiveness of, you know, groups that target not even just white folks, but like include white people in their audiences, because that can have a tremendous impact on cost. Like, what is the market rate for democracy? Like, you tell me. Like, that's one thing I've been saying. Like, if you're going to hold groups accountable to these cost measures, what's the market rate of democracy for a voter of color that's brand new and never has voted for before but may vote for the rest of their life? And furthermore, Republicans don't do this shit. They don't. They don't care. They care about getting power. So if at the end of the day, they do all these things and they have some measurement, but like they got power over the course of 10 years, that's how they operate. So it's all just kind of wild. The longer I do it, the more I learn. I'm just like, oh, I thought I knew. And I feel like every 2 weeks I have like a whole other revelation where I'm like, why am I doing this? I should have quit politics like 7 years ago, like I said I would the first time. But then I love what I do, and I care a lot about it.
Let's take a quick break. Hey, ladies, it's Bridget Todd here. May is High Blood Pressure Education Month. It is crucial for us, especially as Black women, to focus on our heart health. We pour our heart and soul into every aspect of our lives, but often our own health takes a back seat. That's where Release the Pressure comes in. It's all about us, Black women, seeing self-care as an essential act of self-preservation. Whether it's for yourself, your family, or your community, your health is invaluable. Let's help get to our goal of 100,000 Black women putting their hearts first and learn more about their heart health. Here's how you can join in. Head to iHeartRadio.com/RTP for a chance to receive a $1,000 gift card to take care of yourself and prioritize your heart health. Let's make our health a priority. Visit iHeartRadio.com/RTP today. Together, we can make a difference in our health and our lives. Join us and let's take care of our hearts together. Hi, it's Bridget Todd, host of There Are No Girls on the Internet. Listen, technology has made our lives easier in some ways, but it's also made us homebodies, scrolling mindlessly. Well, you get the point. Let Rails to Trails Conservancy unstick you from home. When you get out on a trail and get to walking, you'll feel so good. Trust me. You'll see that being out on the trail is so much more than a day outside. It's good for your soul. Get ideas for getting outside on the trail from Rails to Trails Conservancy, the nation's largest trails, walking, and biking advocacy organization. Visit railstotrails.org/iHeart and on social media at Rails to Trails. Y'all know I love the internet, but a sad truth about it is that it can be a scary place, especially for women, people of color, and trans folks. We've talked to people on this podcast, whistleblowers, activists, and advocates who are making technology safer, who then become targets for doing that work. But the truth is, it can happen to any of us online. That's why I personally use and recommend Delete Me. Delete Me finds and removes any personal information you don't want online and makes sure it stays off. Sign up and provide Delete Me with exactly what information you want deleted, and their experts take it from there. Take control of your data and keep your private life private by signing up for Delete Me, now at a special discount for our listeners. Today, get 20% off your Delete Me plan when you go to joindeleteme.com/nogirls and use promo code NOGIRLS at checkout. The only way to get 20% off is to go to joindeleteme.com/nogirls and enter code NOGIRLS at checkout. That's joindeleteme.com/nogirls, code NOGIRLS. So in 2024, one of my goals is to finally get serious about my finances. It's been kind of a big emotional thing for me. Thinking about money historically has caused me a lot of anxiety and stress because I have a lot of trauma related to money. And if you can relate, if that sounds like you, check out Fearless Finance. Fearless Finance provides on-demand, comprehensive financial planning by the hour. It's a new way to get financial advice without all the headaches, high fees, and commitments that come with traditional financial advisors. Fearless Finance planners don't sell anything. No used car salesman vibe here. And that means no concerns about being sold something just for the commission that it earns a rep. Their planners meet you where you are on your financial journey. No judgment, whether you're looking to buy a house, optimize your savings, or just want to make sure your finances are okay. They can answer your questions and help you achieve your goals. No question is too small. No problem is too big. Fearless Finance is making financial advice more affordable and accessible. You meet with your planner virtually, and they charge by the hour. Visit fearlessfinance.com today to get started. You can chat with a planner for free to make sure it's a good fit. And you'll get $50 off your first planning meeting when you use code GIRLS. And we're back. In the 2020 election, I heard so many people championing the political leadership of Black women for ostensibly saving the United States from another 4 years of President Trump. But these very nice-sounding platitudes do not always come with meaningful investment in the leadership of Black women. For instance, Tatenda is the only Black woman in the United States who runs a digital-only voter engagement operation. I feel like, especially on the left and within the Democratic Party, we love saying things like, oh, trust Black women, elect Black women. And I was sort of surprised to find that you are running the only digital-only voter engagement operation led by a Black woman. And obviously, that's very exciting, but also kind of disappointing. And I guess my question would be, if we say things like, oh, Black women, Black voters, they're the backbone of the left, the backbone of the Democratic Party, why then are we are more Black women not being invested in to do this kind of work? Why are we not investing in this political leadership that folks say they want, that folks say like is really leading our party?
Honestly, like, to be very blunt about it, it's performative bullshit by the white people in power. I don't have much else to say. Honestly, it's like, trust Black women until you have to pay us fairly. Trust Black women until we want a seat at the table. Trust Black women until we're asking for power. And, you know, to be fair, there are some Black organizations, Black-led organizations that do the work, but they tend to be for-profit or like organizations hosting for-profits. Or they tend to be field groups that came out of folks who were like, came up in campaigns and were told like, oh, you can do the Black people work, right? One of the things that I care a lot about is like being able to get institutional power for VFP. Like, yes, we do work that's designed to reach people of color only or like disadvantaged communities only, but like I'm the best at what I do, regardless of who else is out there doing it. And I want to very much so keep pushing the envelope so that that is something that is seen and something that is understood. And I feel like whenever I say that out loud, it's like there's a bit of arrogance in it and hubris, but at the same time, like, if I don't have that, then what am I doing here? Right? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't get to fail the way my white counterparts do.
When you say things like that, what's the response?
I think it's like a mixture of like people are like, okay, or they're terrified of me, which is like really funny because I'm like 5'3" and I'm kind of a goofball, and people who are like, hang out with me and know my friends, like, I'm kind of weird. It's fine. But like, I guess I've been told I'm slightly terrifying when I get in that mode, and okay. You know, like, I've been heard like, oh, you're a lot to swallow. Well, choke. I'm sorry. Like, this is what we're doing.
We're talking about the future of our democracy, the future of what the fabric of our country is going to be like. And we don't really, people like you don't really have time to play small. People like you don't really have time to play humble when we're talking about something that is this important.
Yeah. And you're like fighting for the livelihood of your org and like your, you know, it's like my organization. I care a lot about the people I employ. I care a lot about the work I do. And so you can't go into it, you know, trying to get into a fairly entrenched system of like, oh, these are the people who do the work and these are the people they give money to or whatever. If I'm coming in and wanting to establish an organization that does this work at scale, you know, you don't get there by thinking to yourself little bit by little bit. You kind of get there by setting a really big goal and chasing after it relentlessly. I just don't feel like I have any other choice, to be honest. And I know I'm, again, very, very, very good at what I do. So you almost got to adopt that Olivia Pope swagger and go for it, because otherwise you are going to fail. And so it's almost like a catch-22. I don't know anyone who got to where they are leading an organization or leading a large organization who's like, you know, I was just hoping for the best. Like, no, like there has to be some deliberate. And there are days I wake up and I'm like, how the hell did I get here? Because my career has been wild, to say the least. I've had a wild variety of experiences across a number of orgs. But yeah, you just have to do it and you have to think big.
Well, and I know for you, part of thinking big is the ability to pivot because, you know, our digital landscape is always changing. Like Apple's privacy change last year really limited the tracking capabilities of digital advertisers, which I'm sure changed everything about how you're reaching people online. So can you tell me a bit about your goals and how they've evolved?
Yeah. So I would put them in kind of three buckets. I think one is I'd love to register and mobilize 500,000 people of color in this next election cycle. So register or mobilize. And I think that's very doable if we reach our fundraising goals. We have to just run a very, very smart campaigns and think very strategically and be pretty relentless in our measurement. And so I think the second goal would be for us to be able to release a lot of measurement about how doing these campaigns has changed. We've already started doing that with our 21 programs, where we uncover just how much the Apple privacy measures have impacted certain types of advertising programs across all the platforms. So we have to retool, you know, the cost estimates that we have. We have to retool the strategies that we're using. We have to remeasure and understand what is working to reach these communities, what types of creative are getting us there, what types of data strategies are getting us there or not getting us there, mm-hmm. right? Like eliminating this idea, if we do an experiment and the results are negative, that's not failure, right? That is a learning that we can then spread to everyone and say, don't waste your money doing this. We already did. And guess what? It does not work. So that's a big one, being able to disseminate information. Another big goal of ours is to do a lot of trainings for smaller field organizations. I care a lot about being able to give the information that is in my head and in my team's head about how it is that you can understand digital to people who run organizations who haven't really had a place to go and get information about, like, this is what an ad is. This is what an impression is. This is what an influencer is. This is what people mean when they say influencer marketing. Or, like, this is a text message program. You know, like, these things are basic things that I take for granted because I came up in the space. But, you know, if you've been organizing in the field for years, like, you're not paying attention to, like, a lot of it. And so we need a place for those folks to go and learn about what these terms are, what they mean, and how they can structure their organizations and resource their organizations to be able to do experimentation and learn what works for them. So that's another big goal that I'm excited about. And then the fourth one kind of has nothing to do with the work, but how we do the work.
How do we do the work? It's a tricky question that a lot of people on campaigns don't really like to talk about. For instance, the fact that campaign work is usually pretty grueling. You work terrible hours for terrible pay and are treated terribly too. And I actually have a theory that it's one of the reasons why there's such tight-knit camaraderie on political campaigns. Because staffers have all gone through something traumatic together just by being on the campaign. And it doesn't even stop when the election is over. Earlier this year, Instagram accounts like Dear White Staffer popped up on social media to shed a little bit of light onto the mistreatment of rank-and-file staff on campaigns, nonprofits, and political offices. This used to be Tatenda's life, and my life. And I can't say that I really miss it.
I have been loving the Great Resignation and the result of these, like, Instagrams, like dear White Staffer and mm-hmm. Dear Nonprofit, all of them, because I was that person when I was, until recently, who was just like, this industry is sick and, like, crazy and run by maniacal people who, like, do not care about staffs. And there are so many things that are taken for granted because this is how it's always been done. And one of the big things for me in starting this org is, like, we're going to change how people work. And we're going to change how people work at political organizations. And we're going to treat people with dignity and respect and pay them well. And we're going to do it all under a nonprofit umbrella. And we're going to do it during election years. And we're all going to live healthy lives. My nightmare would be to wake up after an election and to have someone tell me I had to do two all-nighters. Or, like, sorry, like, I gotta go. I picked up an Adderall hat. I gotta go because I was working too much. Like, no, I don't want that for any of my staff. I want my staff to be well rested. I want them to have vacations during election cycles. I want them to not be on public assistance and to be able to, you know, there's a minimum salary of $55,000 at our org. It is what it is, because if people are living in cities and if you are a scheduler for me, you are still doing meaningful work and you deserve to be able to, like, pay rent and pay for groceries and maybe your student loans and, like, live your life, right? I don't want people picking up second, third jobs out of necessity for living. And I think in turn, what we're going to find out, I'm 95% positive, is that when you treat people with this level of dignity and respect, you get better work. Because people are rested. So, and there has not been an example of an organization that has done this at scale. I will fight anyone about it. Like, I am sure. Like, I was the Facebook lady for so many orgs. Like, I know exactly what was going on with many of these folks based on the email times I was receiving things, let alone, like, how they were feeling or tone or whatever. Like, there's got to be a better way. And the only way that there's going to be a better way is if we have, like, actual disruption with a proof point so that people are leaving jobs to force it to be better. It's something I care about, like, as much as the rest of the work.
I'm so glad that that is something that's baked into what you're doing, because I am the same as you. Like, I came up at a time where it was just standard that if you worked in campaigns, if you were working in the progressive movement, that you were working until, you know, the last time that I was in that world, my 9 to 5 was really more like a 7 to 10, right? And then, mm-hmm. you know, when you go out on campaigns, the sort of, like, idea that, like, people are working second jobs or, like, going on government assistance, like, it wasn't great. And I think that whenever we, you know, I'm a little older than some of our listeners, I think, but whenever we would have like, we weren't having a national conversation about sort of how to treat people in a workplace. It was still seen as like a badge of honor that you care so much that you basically don't really have much of a life and hate, you wake up like exhausted every morning. That was seen as a good thing. I'm so happy that we're now having conversations that are getting away from this culture of hustle, hustle, hustle all the time and glorifying that, because I have done that and there is nothing to be glorified about it. Those times in my life, I cannot even imagine going back to those times. But I also think that we, like, when I would talk to others about them, it would be like, well, that's how I did it. And it was this like weird thing where nobody would break the cycle because that's how they did it when they were coming up.
Or it was like a pissing contest of like, well, this happened to you this week. You know what happened to me? And then you all feel like, okay, well, it's fine because like everyone else is in this and this is how it's supposed to be. But like, one, I was always winning these pissing contests. Like I really have worked for some exceptionally like difficult people. And two, what is the, like, if someone's willing to disrespect you at one level, right? Like, I have been cursed at. There was a day I thought I was going to get hit by my manager at work, physically hit. They hit something else instead of me. They're like, and then like, what is the line between that? And then like, oh, well, you didn't get sexually harassed. But then there are people who are, and we're not talking about it. There are predators running around that we all knew were running around doing whatever, but no one got in trouble and still frankly have not gotten in trouble to the level they probably deserve. So like, what are we doing here? Because if we tolerate one and we tolerate the next, then we are tolerating probably most of it because the Overton window is already on the side of abuse. So like, we got to move it completely and we have to shift about it. And I think it's like our generation that's starting to come up and like start our own orgs that's probably going to change the tide. But like this old mentality of like, we need to suffer and continue to be paid discriminatory compared to our white counterparts or deal with X abuse. Like, I'm done. I can't do it anymore. I can't. And I'm so glad so many other people are getting to that point because I've only not had to deal with like pay issues at one job. So what are we doing?
Yeah.
Especially as progressives.
Exactly. Well, that's my thing, is that we are meant to be the folks building a different future. And how can we say that we're going to build a more free, more inclusive, more equitable future when the structures that we are operating in, the structures that we are mired in, are not even more free or not even more equitable or not even more inclusive? It just like doesn't compute to me.
Yeah, because it's uncomputable. Doesn't make sense. But here we are. So I feel like it's not until more of us like snatch seats of power that what's going to be like different. And, you know, I think because of my employment past over the last like, what, 12, 13 years, that like I care so much about like, you know, everyone on my staff. And I think they know, they're like to a degree where they're like, I know, I just have the sniffles. I'm not sick. You don't need to make me go home. Like, I'm good. And I'm like, okay. But like, are you? Because you're sniffling. So like, get off the Zoom, you know? Like,
right.
That's kind of the like, they know I'm paying attention.
Where are we in terms of voter registration? Are we in a good place? Are we in a bad place? Like, what is it? What is the future looking like in terms of getting communities of color registered to vote and mobilized?
I would say for me, it's a frustrating place. So from what I can gather from, you know, the campaign world, it's a midterm. And generally with midterms, people are less concerned about registration. One, because it's harder and more expensive to do. And then two, because at least in this period, we've had like really unprecedented growth in voter registration since about 2018, frankly, over the 2018 cycle and 2020 cycle. And so I'm starting to hear whispers of like, we need to do less of this work because we have so many voters. And I that just concerns me. Like, why should you put the brakes on getting more people involved? Like from a just like an American point of view, like, shouldn't we be trying to get everyone to vote? Like, isn't our job done when everyone's registered to vote? Like that makes sense to me, but you know what I mean? Like campaigns and especially organizations that have political aims are resource constrained. And so they have to spend their money on getting to like 50 plus one. And so voter registration is not going to be a priority for many of these orgs. And it's probably going to be less funded than it will be in 24 and definitely than it was in 20. So I find that just disheartening, disconcerting to hear that. But the other thing that actually is quite concerning, that it's disheartening to see, but also concerning, is that we do have so many new voters and so many new voters who voted in 2018 and didn't vote in 20. And we have so many new voters in 20 who probably won't vote in 22. And so mobilizing these folks who are going to be viewed as like not likely voters, who probably won't be included in these like campaign mathematics of 50 plus one, however, are so imperative to keep involved, especially because this is probably the first midterm or second midterm or first midterm after they've been registered, is really, really crucial. Because if you aren't working to help establish those habits of regular voting, you know, you can register someone, but that doesn't mean they'll vote. And so what is happening, or like the necessity of getting folks who are newly registered over the course of the last 4 years, is also really, really important work that I think folks are starting to pay more attention to. But something that we're also critically thinking about is like these voters who are going to be viewed as unlikely voters in a midterm, who probably won't be spoken to, who probably were recently engaged, who may not have, you know, frequent contacts or touches from any org doing civic engagement work. We're really interested in making sure we're at least speaking to them, you know, over a longer course of time about like, hey, you should consider voting. It's good.
More after a quick break. Hey, ladies, it's Bridget Todd here. May is High Blood Pressure Education Month. It is crucial for us, especially as Black women, to focus on our heart health. We pour our heart and soul into every aspect of our lives, but often our own health takes a back seat. That's where Release the Pressure comes in. It's all about us, Black women, seeing self-care as an essential act of self-preservation. Whether it's for yourself, your family, or your community, your health is invaluable. Let's help get to our goal of 100,000 Black women putting their hearts first and learn more about their heart health. Here's how you can join in. Head to iHeartRadio.com/RTP for a chance to receive a $1,000 gift card to take care of yourself and prioritize your heart health. Let's make our health a priority. Visit iHeartRadio.com/RTP today. Together, we can make a difference in our health and our lives. Join us and let's take care of our hearts together. Hi, it's Bridget Todd, host of There Are No Girls on the Internet. Listen, technology has made our lives easier in some ways, but it's also made us homebodies, scrolling mindlessly. Well, you get the point. Let Rails to Trails Conservancy unstick you from home. When you get out on a trail and get to walking, you'll feel so good. Trust me. You'll see that being out on the trail is so much more than a day outside. It's good for your soul. Get ideas for getting outside on the trail from Rails to Trails Conservancy, the nation's largest trails, walking, and biking advocacy organization. Visit railstotrails.org/iHeart and on social media at Rails to Trails. So in 2024, one of my goals is to finally get serious about my finances. It's been kind of a big emotional thing for me. Thinking about money historically has caused me a lot of anxiety and stress because I have a lot of trauma related to money. And if you can relate, if that sounds like you, check out Fearless Finance. Fearless Finance provides on-demand, comprehensive financial planning by the hour. It's a new way to get financial advice without all the headaches, high fees, and commitments that come with traditional financial advisors. Fearless Finance planners don't sell anything. No used car salesman vibe here. And that means no concerns about being sold something just for the commission that it earns a rep. Their planners meet you where you are on your financial journey. No judgment, whether you're looking to buy a house, optimize your savings, or just want to make sure your finances are okay. They can answer your questions and help you achieve your goals. No question is too small. No problem is too big. Fearless Finance is making financial advice more affordable and accessible. You meet with your planner virtually, and they charge by the hour. Visit fearlessfinance.com today to get started. You can chat with a planner for free to make sure it's a good fit. And you'll get $50 off your first planning meeting when you use code GIRLS.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big MQL man. Then he just kept saying things like, the more MQLs, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means marketing qualified lead. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the MQL man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/customer to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/customer. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Let's get right back into it. So if you've been a little checked out of national politics lately, I do not blame you or judge you, because honestly, I'm right there with you. And of course, I think that everyone should vote if they're able. But I also think that we need to have a world where candidates running for public office actually give people a reason to be excited to vote for them. Where people, especially young voters, first-time voters, Black and brown voters, and women voters, don't just feel like we're voting to keep somebody terrible out of office, or that we're voting for the lesser of two evils. We deserve a political landscape where our elected officials engage us and don't give us so many reasons to just check out.
Yeah, I guess kind of along that vein, what do you say to people who maybe got, especially like people who were first-time voters back in 2020, like, what do you say to people who feel a little checked out, who are like, I don't, like, they're just not feeling it right now? Like, how do you, I'm thinking of a lot of the younger people in my life who are like, I don't see a point of voting. Neither of these parties is for me. I don't feel like I'm being meaningfully engaged. I'm just completely checked out. How do you speak to people like that?
I think it's a few things. One is, like, it's totally fine to be checked out of national politics. I'm checked the hell out of national politics right now. But two, like, I feel like a lot of times the conversations are wrapped up at, like, the Senate level and these very, like, serious levels of government, I guess, if you will, or like high levels of government, when the things that are going to have the most impact on people's lives on a daily level is local government. And that's something that's a bit easier to track. It's people who are more connected to your community. It is things that will, like, carry on. Is your kid going to read a book by a brown person in the year 2023? It is, am I going to be paying more local like taxes on my groceries? It is, you know, so many other things. Like, am I going to have the pothole fixed on my street? Like, my God, there's like a whole thing right now in my neighborhood about like alley reconstruction. Like, it's things like that that people care about that do have material differences. Or like, are we going to have more frequent trash pickup? Or, you know, things like that. So I think that's one way to get people to be more engaged, just to reconnect it to the local angle and say, hey, I know you might be checked out of politics, but like, here are some things happening that like could be impacted. It impacts your daily life. It impacts your family. It impacts your community. It impacts your work. It impacts your coin. So I think that's the big one. Like, we can shift the conversation from like this big, like, philosophical discussion of like if the Republicans and Democrats are both bad in equal measures or whatever, into like an actual conversation about what your daily life could look like under different leadership. And I just think it's, I kind of take issue with like the shaming of people being checked out with national politics. Like, if you don't want people to be checked out and you govern, like, govern so that they're not. I like don't view it as our role to, you know, stand for whatever the administration's doing, or to try and make, like, it's not, I am not messaging for a C4 to make sure people think Joe Biden's great. That is not my job. And if they want people of color to, you know, or young people in particular to believe they're doing a good job, then they can go figure that out. And they should, because it's not going great. So, yeah, I hope they decide to, but like, pay, like, cancel the loans.
Yeah, I mean,
cancel the loans or do something for the climate. It's really not that hard, and do it big. That's the, they'll be back. Trust.
Yeah. I can't blame anybody who is like, I don't feel fired up in any capacity right now for national politics. I don't either. And I don't blame you. And I don't want to get off on a rant of like complaining about this, but I feel like anybody paying attention right now, at best, a little disillusioned. Right. And so I can't blame anybody for being like, I'm not even paying attention. But you're right that that's almost the wrong conversation to be having. The right conversation to be having is perhaps like, oh, do you care about what's happening on your block, on your street, in your neighborhood? That's very different than what's happening at a national level.
Yeah, because unfortunately, like, my street, like, literally ends at the Capitol. So, like, that is my neighborhood. I am in Washington, D.C. I do not live very far from the Capitol at all. Like, I hear helicopters and I'm like, who's coming home? But like, I'm not fired up. I'm not ready to go. Like, if someone told me, like, I think the last thing I got fired up about was like Kathy Hilton was on the Hill. Like, that fired me up. And that was like it. I'm just not there. And I'm in the thick of it. And I was a political operative for, you know, what have you. So I can't blame anybody else who's barely civically engaged to care as much when they've got, like, there's a lot of issues out here that are, like, impacting people's daily lives. And I hate to sound like a Republican, but inflation's one of them. Like, you have to address these things or speak to them in order for people to stay engaged. Like, but I am throwing, what is it? Like, I'm not doing the hard work, so I can't really go in on it. But I've chosen for this not to be my job. I hope they
do. Yeah, I wish anybody who is, that's not my ministry anymore. And I wish those who have adopted that as their ministry, I wish them the best.
But I'm glad. You the best of luck, especially if you're Black and brown. I'm rooting for you. I hope you get listened to. I hope you get a raise. I hope you get your pay. Like, I hope you get listened to. But otherwise, like, I'm so sorry. I have, it's not our ministry. We can just be outside observers and commentators.
Yeah. I hope you get your raise, and I'll definitely follow and like your, like, the account that you're running on the side that's like, Dear White Staffer. I'll definitely follow it.
I live. I check it every day. I like check Kanye and Dear White Staffer and Dear Nonprofits every morning. I'm like, what happened that I need to know about?
Oh, I love it.
And it's just abuse on all counts. That's abuse, what I'm reading every morning.
Abuse, whether it's Kanye or Dear White Staffers, it's just abuse.
Yes.
Okay, so I have kind of a sleeper, like, off-the-wall question for you. So we were talking earlier before I was recording about how I had long COVID, and so I spent a lot of time in bed recovering, catching up on trash TV. And I rewatched Real Housewives of Potomac, and I remember there is an episode with you in it. Am I right?
Yes.
I paused it. I called my partner in, and I was like, I know her. So yeah. tell us, so, like, this is a real intersection of my two interests, which is, like, voter civic engagement and trash reality TV. How did that come to be?
Okay, so I'm a huge Housewives fan. I also have a love for just reality trash TV. I love pop culture. It is, like, my hobby. So I used to teach yoga. I stopped teaching in the pandemic because I, like, got my, like, what restored me about it was the human to human contact. But I taught yoga for 5 years, and I taught at a studio that it no longer exists. It makes me so bad, mad, or sad. It's called Embrace, and it's taught by this wonderful woman named Faith Hunter. She, I think, teaches on NordaTrack. She travels and has pop-up classes in DC. If you ever have the opportunity to go to a Faith Hunter class, I highly recommend it. She is just such a wonderful human being and a wonderful boss, and, like, love her yoga classes, and was so grateful she gave me my first teaching job in DC. So she got a call from producer saying, hey, they want to shoot a yoga class. This teacher's, or this housewife, is interested in pursuing yoga. Guys, it wasn't as real as they made it out to be, and I don't want to get in trouble, but
we don't have to get into it, but
long story short, she had sent an email to all instructors that were like, hey, we need people to come to this yoga class that a housewife is going to co-teach with me. Is anyone interested? And let me tell you, there were 2 days' notice, and I was working at Facebook at the time, and I think I had, like, interviews. I had something important to do, and I texted my boss, like, immediately, and I was like, hey, I need you to cover me for, like, these hours of whatever. I have the opportunity to be on Real Housewives of Potomac, and I can't say no, so please don't make me come into work. Like, please do this for me. And my boss was like, the fact that you're even admitting to me that you are trying to skip work to go on a reality television show, like, I will do it for you. You obviously care so, so much about this. Like, totally fine. I was so excited. I, like, hit my car on a post going out of my, like, parking garage. It was, like, not the best day for me after it. We were there shooting for, I want to say, 4 hours. 4 hours. And first off, these women are artists. They are artists at their craft of reality television. I accidentally yelled. Well, I didn't mean to yell, but, like, the producers don't know about yoga poses, and they had us in downward facing dog for, like, 20 minutes. Okay. Only yoga instructors could hold downward facing dog on their shoulders. And I finally, like, sat down in the middle of a take and was like, we need a different pose. I can't do this anymore. And I got to see how they, like, shoot. And it was incredible. And Giselle and Candace and Ashley are all stunning in person, like, just stunning in person. But they refilm a lot of stuff, which is why sometimes you'll feel like the scene moves. Or, yeah, which is why I was there for 4 hours for, what was it, 2 minutes? 2 minutes worth of episode.
Yes, it's that. It's so short.
And like I'm in there and I'm just trying not to laugh because I can't remember what was going on, but I just remember sitting there being like, this is ridiculous. But oh my God, I'm so happy I'm here. So yeah, it was like one of the highlights, I think, of the tens for me was getting to film Real Housewives, signing the releases. I knew Candace was a housewife before anybody because that was her introductory scene. And I was not allowed to talk about the new housewife to anyone. Like they like make you sign your life away and sign all these NDAs. Yeah. So I had to like hush that there was a new housewife. I knew exactly who she was. I knew her business because I listened to like, they do a lot of conversations when they shoot. So I heard a lot about what was going on in everyone's lives. And Michael Darby, like at one point I was like, oh. Yeah, it was fantastic. And I ended up in the Monique Candace, like, reunion episode where they go at it. They show Candace's first scene and I am in it right behind
yes,
her.
Yes.
So I'm watching the reunion and I was like, and my dad's like, is that you? Because my dad was watching it with me and he was just like, is that you? I was like, yeah, Dad. It was too funny.
You're enshrined, forever enshrined in Housewives history.
I got to make it on another franchise. Like, have me back. I could be a great friend of, I'm not a housewife by any means. I have no partner, but like I could be great entertainment Bravo producers.
I agree. If there's a Bravo producer listening, make this happen. So since it's almost the midterm election, how can folks get involved with the Voter Information Project?
Yes, folks can follow along with what we are doing. We are very active on Twitter. You can find us at Voter Formation. We're pretty irreverent Twitter handle, I would say, that goes in line with the voice of myself and the org. You can also head over to our website, voterformationproject.org. We have a blog where we highlight a lot of work that we may not be doing, but things that folks should know that are happening in the voting rights space, the voting access space, and, you know, just different things that impact communities that we care about. And then finally, I would say it seems a little backwards, but one of the things that I would really love for folks to do if they want to take their activism another level outside of donating at the links or whatnot, would be to get involved with a local organization in your town. We very much so believe in the power of people talking to people in their communities. We very much so want to support organizers that are doing what I call the hand-to-hand combat. And so if you're looking to take it to another level, you don't need to go through us at all. Like, please find an organization in your town or in your state that is doing that work and support them either with volunteering your time or also giving them money.
Got a story about an interesting thing in tech or just want to say hi? You can reach us at hello@tangodi.com. You can also find transcripts for today's episode at tangodi.com. There Are No Girls on the Internet was created by me, Bridget Todd. It's a production of iHeartRadio and Unbossed Creative. Jonathan Strickland is our executive producer. Tari Harrison is our producer and sound engineer. Michael Amato is our contributing producer. I'm your host, Bridget Todd. If you want to help us grow, rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, check out the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Hey ladies, it's Bridget Todd here. As women, we put our hearts into everything. May is High Blood Pressure Education Month, and it's time to focus on our heart health. Release the Pressure wants to help Black women look at self-care as an act of self-preservation. During High Blood Pressure Education Month, let's help get to our goal of 100,000 Black women putting their hearts first and learn more about their heart health. Visit iHeartRadio.com/RTP for a chance to receive a $1,000 gift card to take care of yourself and prioritize your heart health. That's iHeartRadio.com/RTP. Hi, it's Bridget Todd, host of There Are No Girls on the Internet. Listen, technology has made our lives easier in some ways, but it's also made us homebodies, scrolling mindlessly. Well, you get the point. Let Rails to Trails Conservancy unstick you from home. When you get out on a trail and get to walking, you'll feel so good. Trust me. You'll see that being out on the trail is so much more than a day outside. It's good for your soul. Get ideas for getting outside on the trail from Rails to Trails Conservancy, the nation's largest trails, walking, and biking advocacy organization. Visit railstotrails.org/iHeart and on social media at RailsToTrails.
Looking for hair removal tools that not only deliver smooth results, but also empower you with a sense of complete control? Enter Conair Girl Bomb, your secret weapons for smooth, sleek results, made just for women. From the ultimate Girl Bomb grip and professional-grade blades, you don't have to compromise and settle for less. Conair Girl Bomb equips you with the precision and power previously reserved for men's grooming tools. So take your hair removal routine to the next level with Conair Girl Bomb. Available at conairgirlbomb.com or a retailer near you.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.